Sairam, dear listeners, and welcome once again to Vahini Satsang. So today we are continuing in the 10th chapter of Vahini Satsang. We are in segment 10.5. The last 2-3 episodes we spent time contemplating on segment 10.4. The whole chapter of 10 we have divided into 5 segments, and yes, some of the concepts that Bhagwan has mentioned in this chapter are deep. Some of them need a lot of reflection, and it definitely needs a lot of contemplation to understand and internalize them in such a way that we are able to practice them in our real day-to-day life. Bhagwan starts off this chapter by telling this devotee that you can always be happy if you know what is the reality. When the devotee says that, "Swami, I'm always trying to be in joy," Swami says, "There is no need to try. Sorrow will just flee from you once the reality is known." And that is how Bhagwan begins by talking about what is reality. And that is how Bhagwan mentions about the I principle, how the body is not I, how when the experiencing I is itself unreal, how can the experiences of this body be real? And Bhagwan takes the bhakta through the journey of atmajnana, so to speak. And that is how Bhagwan reveals the concept of mukti. Bhagwan tells the devotee what is chittakasa, chidakasa, bhutakasa. We have spent a session completely on this, and how the mind alone is the cause for bondage and liberation, and how the mind manufactures these delusions, and how all the delusions of the mind can be wiped off once we have the medicine of vichara or inquiry. That is the path of self-inquiry. And Bhagwan says all the dhyana, puja, pranayama, whatever we are doing, it is so that we can get into this path of inquiry. And as the bhakta started talking about sadhana and had inquiries about maunam, the vow of silence which sadhakas often undertake, that's when Bhagwan clarified how just keeping silent or not talking is not maunam. And Bhagwan goes deeper into the concept of what is true silence, and how it is very difficult to find the real jnanis. The real jnanis, Bhagwan says, are people who have known the reality. All these people that you see in the world today who just take the vow of silence are not necessarily jnanis. They are not the realized souls. And that's when Bhagwan introduces the concept of Devamsha Sambhutas. There are people who are of that nature, such self-realized souls, who take birth because they have very little karma, but they are here to do acts which don't attach themselves to them, and they are here for the welfare of the world. And as we were talking about this, I mentioned to you the examples of Swami Vivekananda, Sri Ramakrishna Paramahansa, how renunciation is a hallmark of such souls. And Bhagwan stresses this concept of vairagyam. And as we look at the lives of these self-realized masters, Bhagwan tells the bhakta that, yes, it all goes back to bhakti. From bhakti, we reach the stage of jnana. And before bhakti is anurakti, the affection. The affection is the flower. Anurakti is the flower. Bhakti is the fruit. Ripening of this fruit is jnana. And vairagya is the final stage of the full fruit that is ripe and ready. We spent a lot of time just on this continuum, this stage of evolution for a bhakta, anurakti, bhakti, jnana, and vairagya. And Bhagwan stressed, once you reach the stage of jnana, how the mind only sees oneness, but at the same time, Bhagwan says that you should not pretend you are that unless you are really that. And how people conveniently misinterpret this and tell that I am Brahman, I have attained moksha. Bhagwan says there is no point in you declaring such until you have had that experience. And these are experiences, the evolution to these stages, Bhagwan says, happens through service. The ripening of the bhakti into jnana, which is a very esoteric stage and very difficult stage to move from bhakti to jnana, to get that experience of oneness. And Bhagwan says that this can be realized through the path of service. And that's why in the previous session, I shared with you many anecdotes from the life of Swami Vivekananda, which very clearly shows how Bhagwan, through Swami Vivekananda and Ramakrishna Paramahansa, gave us beautiful messages and examples of this. And that's what we saw in Bhagwan's life, and that's what Bhagwan also has been asking the devotees and the students to be engaged in, because this is the effortless way to make that transition and reach that glorious stage. And as the segment 4 concludes, Swami says that those who have the inclination and interest can inquire about this path. However, it must be practiced. There is no use simply hearing and repeating, all is one, all is one. One has to actually practice it, and to get onto this path, service is so important. And then the bhakta questions again about what Adi Shankara has said. How Adi Shankara referred to this world as a city seen through a mirror. For Adi Shankara, the world was as illusory as the reflection of a city that you see in the mirror. And Bhagwan then goes on to explain to the bhakta how to understand this and how to take this principle and live it in our real life. Are these concepts that are only good for intellectual understanding, or are they meant to make our daily life richer, more fulfilling, more joyful. And how to do that? Why should we learn these concepts if they only satisfy the left brain but have nothing to do with adding any joy to our life? So Bhagwan explains this concept, and as we listen to segment 10.5, we will reflect on what Bhagwan has mentioned about this in his discourses, and how we can take this message and translate it into various practices and principles that will make every day of our life brighter, fuller, and one with joy. So let's listen once again to what Bhagwan has given us in segment 10.5. I just shared with you the beginning of the conversation. Let's listen to the complete conversation between the Bhakta and Bhagwan in this last part of chapter 10.
Swami, Shankara has already said, Vishwam darpana drishyamana nagari tulyam nijantaragatam, which means the world, if you really penetrate into its inner meaning, is like a city seen through a mirror. This vision that the jagat is unreal and that it is all maya, is this for common people or for jnanis also?
The jnani's eyes see all things as Brahman. The ajnani, or the person without jnana, cannot understand whatever is said. So, all shastras are intended to benefit the middlings.
This means that all sadhanas are included in the Vicharana Marga, the path of inquiry?
Yes. The teaching of the Vedanta is about, who am I? And to make this inquiry, only those equipped with the four instruments are competent. The purpose of the four is to realize that the Atma is real and all else is unreal. Also, to discriminate between Atma and all else.
How is that to be realized, Swami?
By inquiring into the nature of the Atma. First, they do all varieties of sadhana and finally enter upon this. While a child, they teach you A, B, C, D, isn't it? Even MA and BA curricula consist of this A, B, C, D and their permutations and combinations. But to realize this fact, one has to complete one's studies. The shastras are based on akshara. Just because they are based on akshara, you cannot grasp them unless you are filled with experience. All margas are based on the Vicharana Marga, the path of enquiry.
But there are some who attain samadhi. Will they have all this enquiry in samadhi also?
Wonderful fellow! How can there be enquiry in samadhi? When you sleep soundly, do you have any thoughts about the world around you? This is also like that.
Will there be manas in samadhi?
The manas that persists in sleep will exist there also.
They talk of a turiya stage, a beyond stage in samadhi. What is that, Swami?
The people who are in such samadhi, even if their eyes are open, they are beyond the stages of waking, dreaming and deep sleep. That is turiya.
Why is it that those stages are absent there? What are the characteristics of that stage?
Those three are the characteristics of I-ness or ahankara. That ahankara is manas, which does all acts, that will not be present in the Turiya stage. It would have disappeared long ago. For them, it is all the same, with eyes open or with eyes closed. It is all one.
Swami, without that aham, how can they talk?
What was aham in the beginning, when the reality is grasped, is transformed as Swarupa, the true entity. This is referred to as destruction of the mind, Manonashanam.
So this Nirvikalpa Samadhi is all Nasanam or destruction?
Well, my boy, Samadhi is a state of merging, Laya, not destruction. The Sadhaka stage is when you have both construction and destruction.
This subject is very interesting, Swami.
Don't sit quiet merely appreciating it. Practice it in daily life. All right, you can take leave.
Very good, Swami. Please bless me in that practice. I shall be back soon.
So that is how segment 10.5, the last segment of chapter 10 of Sandeha Nivarini, concludes. The summum bonum of this segment is Bhagwan is asking us to get on to this path of vicharana, this path of self-inquiry. And Bhagwan says how the mind in the Turiya stage does not exist anymore. The mind merges into aham. If you read Bhagwan's discourses about self-inquiry, Bhagwan says it is the physical body which performs this japam or dhyanam or the various spiritual practices. But what is the body? The body is a water bubble. And Swami says, the mind which is based upon this physical body is but a mad monkey. We have heard this from Bhagwan in any number of discourses where Bhagwan would say, the body is a water bubble. The mind is a mad monkey. Don't follow the body. Don't follow the mind. Follow your conscience. In every discourse that he told, that he gave to the students, Swami would constantly reiterate this. So Swami is saying, with the help of this mad monkey and this body that is like a water bubble, how can you achieve the permanent Atma? All these japa, dhyana, bhajans, sadhana, whatever you are doing, they are all methods for temporarily controlling the mind, Swami says. This is from Bhagwan's discourse delivered in Prashant Nilayam Mandir on the 30th of March, 1987, probably it was a Ugadi day, and we are now just a few days away from the festival of Ugadi. Today is April 8th, 2021. So Bhagwan, way back in 1987, in his Ugadi message, is saying, all the sadhana that we are doing, they are all meant to temporarily control the mind. But there is one practice that will have a permanent effect. All the other practices will only control the mind temporarily. Isn't that we go and sit for bhajans and for some time we are happy. Sometime we are not bothered by the antics of the mind. Or we sit for meditation. So for that 5 minutes or that 10 minutes, our mind is calm. We are not tormented with the various vacillations of our thoughts and mind, isn't it? The Swami is telling all these sadhanas are okay to give you temporary relief from the mind. But there is only one practice that will give you a permanent relief, permanent effect it will have. And that is the path of self-enquiry. That is what Bhagavan is telling. The teaching of the Vedanta is who am I. In this segment, that's what Bhagavan says. The teaching of the Vedanta is about this. Understanding who am I. And Bhagavan says only those equipped with the four instruments are competent. Bhagavan has not explained what are the four instruments in this segment, but in my limited understanding, I think it is Mano, Buddhi, Chitta, Ahankara, the four components of the mind. These are the four instruments. The purpose of these four is to realize that Atma is real and everything else is unreal. To distinguish between Atma and Anatma, that is what is the purpose of all these internal faculties. And when the bhakta asks Swami, how do we make that discrimination? Then Swami says, you have to inquire into the nature of the Atma. Going back to that Ugadi discourse of 1987, Swami says, you should continue to inquire, who am I, until you reach the stage where you find out who you really are. The inquiry should go on thus. This is my body. Here is my body. This is my mind. This is my heart. These are my feelings. This is my intellect. And I am not any of these. I am different, isn't it? Isn't it? Swami would always in his discourses pick up a handkerchief and say, this is a handkerchief, which means this handkerchief is different from me. When I say this is my hand, this is my nose, or these are my eyes or my ear, it means that these are different from me. The Swami is telling, you are not any of these. So if someone praises you or someone criticizes you, to whom does it affect? It affects only the physical body. You are not that. So constantly, if we contemplate on this, if I am saying that this is my mind, or my mind is not fine, or my hand is not okay, then there is something that is apart from this. And whatever happens, if our mind is not fine today, that relates to the mind, but you are not the mind. To constantly be in this inquiry, if I am not the mind, if I am not the body, if I am not this, then who am I? Swami says, this contemplation will slowly help you to develop that sense of detachment and develop the virtue of sacrifice. If you constantly think about it, if you feel, okay, this, somebody has hurt me, it's okay. I am not this mind, I am not this body. One physical body has abused another physical body. That is inert, this is also inert. In fact, that reminds one of the story of Sri Adi Shankaracharya. Bhagavan mentioned this story so many times, how when Adi Shankaracharya was going and there was this so-called untouchable in those days, a man of lower caste who came and stood on the way and people tried to shoo him away. And when Adi Shankara also fell into that trap and asked this person to leave, and this person said, Whom are you asking to leave? Are you asking the body? Then the body is inert. My body and your body both are inert. If you are asking the Atma to leave, the Atma is all pervasive. The Atma does not have any distinction about high, low, anything. Whom are you asking to leave? And that is when Adi Shankara realizes his folly, even though he had written and preached about the non-dual path, about Advaita. Somehow when he was confronted with the situation in real life, he had fallen into that false idea. And as it turns out, it was Lord Shiva himself who had taken that form to awaken Adi Shankara. And later on, Adi Shankara falls at the feet of the Lord, offering his gratitude for opening his eyes. It is one thing to know the oneness of everything around intellectually, but as I said, it's a different thing to actually live that in real life. And that is what Lord Shiva wanted Adi Shankara to experience. And he came down in that form to open his eyes about this. So Bhagavan says that man identifies himself with a particular name and form and builds up all these relationships on that basis. But how real and permanent are these names and forms? They are all projections of the mind, and they have an existence as long as the mind and the body remain. Bhagavan gives this very beautiful example. Swami says the heart represents the Atma. And the Atma is self-effulgent. The light from the heart, or the light from the Atma, is what illumines the mind. The power of the mind comes from the Atma. We have discussed this in a previous session. The mind has no energy, no power of its own. It functions because of the power of the Atma. So the light of the Atma illumines the mind and enables it to see the external world. Without this illumination, the mind cannot comprehend anything. Swami says, this light of the Atma, this Atma is the sun, and the mind is the moon. We know that the moon has no light of its own, isn't it? Whatever light that we see coming from the moon, it is basically the reflection of the light from the sun. On its own, the moon has no light. The sun is the star which continuously burns itself away and gives that light. The moon shines because of the sun. Same way Swami says, the mind functions because of the light of the Atma. And as we have seen, when the sun shines in full glory, the moon is hardly visible, isn't it? In the daytime, you can hardly see the moon. It's not that the moon is not there. You cannot see it because the sun is in its brilliance. Swami says, in the same way, when there is awareness of the Atma, when you are in the light of the Atma, then the mind is almost invisible. The mind is not perceivable. So it is the Atma which is the basis for everything, just like the sun is the basis for everything. It is the Atma that is the basis for everything. And Bhagavan here says, people are naive in thinking that the Atma is inside the body. Many times, you know, we in our illustrations or whenever we think about the Atma, we think that the mind is in the head and the Atma is in the heart. Often people picturize it also in this manner. And Bhagavan says that is a very limited and false understanding of this concept, because the body, the mind, the entire cosmos is in the Atma. Everything is the Atma. Atma is not in you. You are in the Atma. The Atma cannot be inside anything else. We are not inside the sun. The sun is everywhere, isn't it? It is everything. And Bhagavan says, everyone should develop this consciousness that I am Atma, I am Brahma. That's what the Upanishad say, isn't it? I am Atma Brahma. That is one of the Mahavakyas of the Upanishads. I am Atma Brahma. Swami says, when you say I am Atma or I am Brahma, I am Brahma. Who is that I? Brahma means pervasiveness. Swami says, Brahma is that which is there everywhere. Brahat, which is there all over. So when you are saying, I am Brahma, the consciousness of all pervasiveness should be developed, Swami says. What it means is, when I say I am Atma or I am Brahma, we should have that awareness that I am all pervasive, because Brahman is all pervasive. It is equally present everywhere. Swami says that is the understanding of Atma. That is the true understanding of Atma. Whatever you do, whatever you see, wherever you speak, Swami says, one must saturate it with divinity, so that you can be aware of this reality of the all-pervasiveness of the Atma. The Atma is not inside you, you are in the Atma. That is what is the meaning of I am Atma, Brahma. It is there everywhere. In fact, let me play for you a little discourse clip from Bhagavan's discourse given in November 24th during the birthday celebrations, 1987, and Bhagavan says here how to know the Atma Tattva.
Atma Tattva ni telusukovataniki evi aa margam.
How to proceed to understand this Atma Tattva?
Unnadanta Atmane.
What really exists?
Ekkada chusina Atmane.
Atma is all pervasive.
Nindi nivinukritamainatundi Atmane.
Atma is
prati padarthamu Atmane.
Everything is
prati vishayamu Atmane.
Every vishayam
prati vyakti Atmane.
Every human being is Atma. Then what is it that you have to understand actually?
Aite anatma anetvantidi manam kalpinchukotam cheta ee atmanu manam direct ga alaga sarasari manam chudalekapothunnamu.
But this Atma is covered by the feeling of anatma which is created in us, and therefore we are not getting a vision of Atma.
Anatmanu tolaginchukunte atma adigare maaripothundi.
If you can remove this covering of anatma, then automatically
manam chesetundi yokka navamita margamulo shravanam kirtanam vishnu sunnam pada sevanam vandanam archanam dasyam sneham atma nivedam ee vidhamaina margamulu anninti kudanu em chestunnayi ante kevalam atma darshanam kosam kaadu atmanu manam darshinchadaniki em matram aashinchanakkaraledu. అనాత్మను తొలగించుకుంటే చాలు.
ఆల్ ది 9 టైప్స్ ఆఫ్ డివోషన్ విచ్ ఆర్ ప్రిస్క్రైబ్డ్ మెన్ ఓన్లీ ఫర్ రిమూవింగ్ ది ఫీలింగ్ ఆఫ్ అనాత్మ. ఇఫ్ దిస్ ఇస్ రిమూవ్డ్ వీ రిమైన్ వాట్ వీఆర్ అండ్ దట్ ఈస్ ఆత్మ.
కనుక మనం తొలగించుకోవే నిమిత్తమై ఈ సాధనలు చేస్తున్నామే కానీ ఆత్మను కొత్తగా మనం దర్శించుకోవాల్సిన సాధన చేయటం కాదు.
ఇట్ ఈస్ ఓన్లీ ఫర్ ది రిమూవింగ్ ది కవర్ ఆల్ ది ఎక్సర్సైజెస్ ఆర్ మేడ్. But it is not for getting
the mottamota manlo chakkaga foundation vesukovali.
We have to lay a very strong foundation for this
nitya satyamainatundi yokka punadulu manam bhadranga vesukunnappude ye sevalu endukani ye sadhanalu endukani manu digvijayanni pondutam.
If our foundation in these lines is strong, whatever service we undertake, whatever work we undertake,
eppudu chusina sandehala kattaga manam maarutunte,
if every
sadhanalo manam vijayanni ye reethiga sadhistam,
if every minute we are full of doubts and suspicion, how can we achieve success at all?
Kanuka chinna chinna dani endi ee manasu chaala అడవుడి అయి పొందుతుంది అది.
ఈవెన్ ఇన్ స్మాల్ థింగ్స్ దిస్ మైండ్ ఇస్ గెటింగ్ వేవరింగ్.
ఆత్మానందం అనేటువంటి దానిని అనుభవించడానికి ఇది ఏమాత్రము శక్తి సామర్థ్యములు ఉండవు.
హౌ కెన్ దిస్ మైండ్ హ్యావ్ దెన్ ది కెపాసిటీ టు ఎంజాయ్ ద బ్లిస్ ఆఫ్ ఆత్మ.
ఈ భ్రాంతులంతా అతికించుకున్న ముక్కులు.
ఆల్ దీస్ డెల్యూజన్స్ మే బి కంపేర్డ్ టు నో సస్.
ఒక్కతూరి దగ్గితేనే ఈ ముక్కు పడిపోతుంది, తుమ్మితే ఉంటుంది, ఆ గజం దూరం ఎగిరిపోతుంది.
Such no stuck noses which are artificial cannot remain permanently on the face.
ilanti anityamu ashastamainatunti oka talampulu cheta nitya satyamainatunti oka aatmaanandani manam enaadu kodanu andukolemu.
When we are basing ourselves on impermanent temporary transient things, kanaka mottamata
prati oka vyakti kodanu prati oka sevakudu kodanu
therefore
atmane aadharamu nenu atma swarupunni aneetunti yokka bhavani manam abhruti parchukovali.
Therefore every individual and worker also should develop in him that I am
naalouni atmane andari endu untundali.
Atma which is in me is in
andari endu unnatundi atmane naalo untundali.
The same atma which is found in everyone else is also in
me. Evariki baadha kaligina adi naade.
Whatever hurt happens,
evariki aanandam kaligina adi naade.
Everyone's joy is my joy.
ఈ భావాన్ని మనం అభివృద్ధి పరుచుకున్నప్పుడే సేవ లోపల చక్కని ఆనందవంతమైనటువంటి సేవను మనం అనుభవించగలము, ఇతరులకు అందించగలము.
Only when we develop this feeling, we'll be able to serve fully and well, and we'll also enjoy.
కేవలం వేసుకున్న వేషాలైనటువంటి ఈ దేహభావాన్ని పుట్టుకుని అనవసరంగా మనం వాదోపవాదములు వేయటము ఇది సరైన మార్గం కాదు.
Entering into argumentation based upon the physical bodies is not justified, it's not correct.
So that was from Bhagwan's discourse in 1987, where Bhagwan is so emphatically mentioning the practicality of this feeling of I am the Atma. Swami is telling all the Sevadals, I think that was a Sevadal conference, and Swami is telling that we have to experience this feeling of oneness, that the same Atma which is there in me is there in everyone. And as we just discussed before, it's a fallacy to think that the Atma is in me. We are all in the Atma, just like we are all in the light of the sun. The sun is not really in us. There is a reflection of the sun in all of us, and it is there equally in all of us. So in the same way, Bhagwan is telling, when we do seva, we should do with that feeling of oneness, because that I principle is present everywhere. And Bhagwan, in the discourse in 1987, Ugadi, Swami says that the first word that came was Aham. Even Om came after Aham. When you talk about creation, before all creation, Aham alone existed, Swami says, the I principle. And that I became many. Swami says, one who realizes the oneness of what he regards as this I with the cosmic Aham, that person knows the reality. Basically, the universal I, what we see everywhere, is that one principle of I, because it is that one that became many. Bijam mam sarva bhuta nam. Bhuta nam, Swami used to say this, what Krishna mentions in the Gita. It is that one principle, the universal I, which appears in different names and forms in different bodies because of different times and circumstances. But the I remains unchanged. The inner principle, that remains unchanged. And Bhagwan gives that example of an actor wearing different clothes, different roles that he plays in different disguises. But he remains the one and the same person. Bhagwan often used to give this example of how in a woman's college, you will have even women donning the role of men, but ultimately that does not change them. So similarly, Bhagwan says that realization of the unchanging and the universal character of the I, that is what is the essential objective of the spiritual quest. And when does this duality happen? There is a difference between Aham and Ahamkara. So Ahamkara happens when Aham, the I principle, takes on an akara, takes on a form and a name That's when it becomes ahamkara. And that is when the duality comes. That is when this whole aspect of I am different and you're different and he's different, that whole feeling and that whole world that we create around us of diversity is because of missing this principle of aham. When the aham acquires a form, a name, that's when ahamkara happens. So that's why, how does that happen? Because we associate a name and form to that aham. What we are truly is just that aham, that I principle. Once we say that we are not the body, we are not the mind, when once we go back to that whole inquiry of if I'm saying I'm the body or I'm the, this is, this heart is mine or this mind is mine or this legs are mine, then who am I? So that I principle is what is the truly aham principle. When the aham principle identifies itself with the body, that's when it becomes ahamkara, Bhagavan says. And that is what is the birth of ego, isn't it? Once we identify ourselves with a particular name, particular form, that's when the dilution of the sense of oneness happens. And why does this happen? It happens because of the mind. Because the mind wrongly associates itself. Instead of associating itself with the aham, with the atma, the mind associates itself with the world around. The mind associates itself with everything that is external, because the mind is always turned towards the external by the sense organs. And so the solution is, as Bhagavan says, it is only by withdrawing it from the sense objects. So how can you have the mind identify with the atma? Only when you withdraw it from the sense objects. Whatever spiritual exercises we are doing, most of the time they are at the mental level. The mind cannot comprehend the nature of the atma, Bhagavan says. Those who perform japa, dhyana or puja, thinking of God as a separate being from themselves, are still, Swami says, they are victims of dualism only. All our sadhana should be to realize and to feel oneness with the Atma within. There is no need to seek the Atma, Swami says. As we heard in the discourse, Swami is telling there is no need to seek, because what you are is Atma. What you have to remove is all those feelings that you are not, Anatma. You have to remove all those feelings that truly don't identify you truly with who you are. All sadhanas are performed to get rid of the anatma, everything that is not permanent. What is permanent is only that aham, only that atma. And so when the bhakta says, Swami, without that aham, how can we talk? Swami, that's when the Swami says, when that what was aham in the beginning, when the reality is grasped, is transformed as swarupa, as a true entity. You don't, that aham, once you identify yourself with that atma completely, that is when the mind ceases to exist. That's when mano nashanam happens. Or as Bhagavan clarifies, in the nirvikalpa samadhi stage, what happens is there is complete mergence. What is the mergence? Mergence of the mind with the atma. That is the end. That is what is the stage of samadhi, or the final culmination. But yes, people, it is not easy. Often we fall into this trap. In fact, Swami gives another story of Sri Adi Shankara, how once Adi Shankara went to Kashi and he prayed to Lord Vishwanatha there, "Oh Lord, I have come here to redeem myself of the three sins that I have committed." And everyone wondered, what are the sins that Adi Shankara has committed? Because he is someone who cannot harm anyone. He cannot do anything wrong. Why is he calling himself a sinner? And he told the Lord, "Oh Lord Vishwanatha, ఇట్ వాజ్ ఐ హు డిక్లేర్డ్ యతో వాచో నివర్తంతే అప్రాప్య మనసాస, విచ్ మీన్స్ దట్ యు ఆర్ బియాండ్ ది కెన్ ఆఫ్ థాట్ అండ్ వర్డ్. హూ కెన్ డిస్క్రైబ్ యూ? యు ఆర్ బియాండ్ ద మైండ్. యెట్ ఐ ట్రై టు డిస్క్రైబ్ యూ, యెట్ ఐ ట్రై టు యులజైజ్ యూ, ఐ ట్రై టు ప్రేజ్ యూ విత్ దోస్ ఎనీ నంబర్ ఆఫ్ అపిలేషన్స్. ఈషా, గిరీషా, పరేషా, మహేషా, ఆల్ దీస్ ఆర్ ద వేస్ ఐ ట్రై టు ఎక్స్టోల్ యూ, ఈవెన్ దో యూ ఆర్ సమ్వన్ హూ కెనాట్ బి ఎక్స్టోల్డ్ అండర్స్టూడ్ విత్ ద మైండ్. సో ఐ హ్యావ్ నాట్ ప్రాక్టీస్డ్ వాట్ ఐ ప్రీచ్డ్. దిస్ ఇస్ మై ఫస్ట్ సిన్. అండ్ దెన్ హీ సెడ్, మై సెకండ్ సిన్ ఇస్ ఐ డిక్లేర్ దట్ గాడ్ ఈజ్ ఎవ్రీవేర్, ఐ డిక్లేర్ దట్ ద ఆత్మా ఇస్ ఎవ్రీవేర్, yet I have come all the way to Kashi to have your darshan, as if you are present only in Kashi. Again, I said something and I am doing something else. This is my second sin. And what is the third sin? It is I who has said that na punyam na papam na sukham na dukham, which means there is no sin, there is no merit, there is no joy, there is no sorrow. Nothing can touch the Atma, yet I am praying for the atonement of my sin. This is the third sin that I have committed. So this is what Sri Adi Shankara tells Lord Shiva in Kashi. Yes, it is a path which needs a lot of contemplation, which needs a lot of inquiry. And someone like Adi Shankara also at times lost it. Because when you live in this world which is full of duality, you fall into this trap, and that is inevitable. Because duality is an obvious fact of everyday life. And Swami himself says, as long as men are engaged in activity in the phenomenal world, the dualistic attitude is inescapable. You cannot escape that feeling of, you know, relating to everyone with a name and form. And that is the reason why all scriptural injunctions are designed to regulate man's conduct in the phenomenal and in the temporal world, Swami says. Everything is to regulate our conduct, because anyway what we see is all duality. So how to lead a life so that this duality does not affect us, we don't fall into this trap, or we learn to evolve from this? Swami says, many persons claim that they are observing rigorous tapas. What is the outcome of these austerities? If their hearts soften and they show compassion towards the ailing and the helpless, only then can their penance have any meaning, Bhagwan says. In fact, this is very, very powerful. It is very practical. Let me play for you one discourse where Bhagwan mentions what is the true essence of walking on this path of Advaita. What is the real fruit of tapas?
కాళ్ళు లేవు కాని ఆత్మకు,
ఆత్మ హ్యాస్ నో లెగ్స్,
అది పోయినంత వేగం మరి దేని కూడా పోవడానికి,
నథింగ్ కెన్ మూవ్ ఫాస్టర్ దెన్ ఆత్మ,
దానికి చేతులు లేవు కాని
ఇట్ హ్యాస్ నో హ్యాండ్స్,
అది అన్నిటినీ పట్టేసేస్తుంది,
బట్ ఇట్ కెన్ క్యాప్చర్ ఎనీథింగ్,
కన్నులు లేవు కానీ
ఇట్ హస్ నో ఐస్,
దాని చూడనటువంటి జగత్తు లేనే లేదు,
దేర్ ఇస్ నథింగ్ ఇట్ డస్ నాట్ సీ,
కానీ అట్టి ఆత్మను మనం దక్కించుకోవాలి, చిక్కించుకోవాలంటే ఒక్క ప్రేమ తత్వంతో తప్ప అన్య మార్గంలో మనకు అర్థం.
ఇఫ్ యు వాంట్ అండర్స్టాండ్ అండ్ హోల్డ్ ఆన్ టు దిస్ ఆత్మా, ఇట్స్ ఓన్లీ లవ్ ఇస్ ది ఓన్లీ పాత్,
కనుక ఆ ప్రేమనే రసస్వరూపము,
దిస్ వెరీ లవ్ ఇస్ ఇన్ ది ఫార్మ్ ఆఫ్ రస,
నవరసములు అంటుంటారు కవిత్తులు.
The poets describe in a different style.
కానీ నవరసములు కాదుండేది, రెండే రెండు రసములు.
There are no navarasas, there are only two.
ఒకటి కరుణారసము, రెండవది శోకరసము.
One is compassion, the other one is misery.
మిగిలినటువంటి రసములు అన్ని కూడా ఈ రెండింటిలోనే చేరిపోయి
ద రెస్ట్ ఆఫ్ ది అదర్స్ గాట్ మిక్స్డ్ అప్ ఇన్ దీస్ టు.
కనుక ఈ కరుణారసమే ప్రేమ రసం.
దేర్ఫోర్ దిస్ కంపాషన్ ఇస్ ద రస్ ఆఫ్ లవ్.
ఈ ప్రేమ రసం ఉండిన పరమాత్ముడు మన హస్తగతం అయిపోతాడు.
సో లాంగ్ దిస్ లైఫ్ ఫ్లూయిడ్ ఆఫ్ లవ్ యూ కెన్ క్యాచ్ హోల్డ్ ఆఫ్ గాడ్.
లవ్ ఈస్ గాడ్, లివ్ ఇన్ లవ్.
దేర్ఫోర్ ఇట్ ఈస్ సెడ్ లవ్ ఈస్ గాడ్ అండ్ లివ్ ఇన్ లవ్.
కనుక మనం జీవించవలసింది ఈ ప్రేమతో జీవించాలి.
వీ షుడ్ లివ్ విత్ సచ్ లవ్.
ఏ సంవత్సరమైనా కదిలిపోని,
లెట్ ఎనీ ఇయర్ మూవ్,
ఏ ఋతువులైనా రాని,
లెట్ సీజన్ కమ్,
ఏ యొక్క యుద్ధములైనా సంభవించని,
లెట్ దేర్ బి వార్,
కానీ ఆ భగవంతుని కరుణాకటాక్షం అనేటువంటి ఒక రసము ఒక బిందువుగా ఉంటుంటే అన్నింటినీ మనం సాధించవచ్చు.
బట్ ఇఫ్ యు ఎంజాయ్ గాడ్స్ గ్రేస్ జస్ట్ ఎ డ్రాప్, ఎవ్రీథింగ్ విల్ బి సక్సెస్ఫుల్.
సో దట్ ఈస్ వాట్ భగవాన్ would often ask us to do. Yes, there are these concepts of understanding the Atma, merging the mind in the Atma, of removing everything that is anatma. And Bhagavan says, all these sadhanas, all these spiritual practices that you do towards this, if they don't soften your heart, if you do not ultimately have compassion towards another person, then all of this has no meaning. All the sadhanas performed by a hard-hearted person, Swami says, are utterly futile. Bhagavan says how so many people undertake meditation as a spiritual exercise. They do hours of meditation from morning till night, but actually Swami says everything that you do during the day, it involves concentration, isn't it? Whether you're eating, whether you're working, whether you're cycling, jogging, everything has some amount of concentration. Without concentration, there is no activity that can be done. When the concentration is on God, then it becomes a sort of meditation. Swami says, if people do not listen with one-pointed attention, then they will not understand what is being said. So even listening to a discourse, that is also a meditation. In fact, a lot of people have given different names to meditation, and people try different methods of meditation. They pay money and learn all this. Swami says, instead of spending hours in all these so-called meditation with a mind that is restlessly hopping from one thought to another like a monkey, it would be better to concentrate on the performance of one's own duties. Whatever official duty you have, whatever social duty you have, whatever personal duty you have, can you do that like a meditation? Swami says, what is the use of sitting in meditation for an hour when you cannot keep your mind still for a minute? Best is, whatever work you are doing, you think that that work is for God and offer that to God. See God in everything you do. That is the way we can learn to develop that broad feeling. Instead of following, Swami says, why are you engaged in all these gymnastics and subjecting yourself to so many hazards actually by following all these practices? Devote yourself to your duties. Some people want to be in solitude. Swami says being alone is not solitude. People go to all Rishikesh, Haridwar, and they say, I want to be in solitude. They don't even know what is solitude. Sitting alone in the forest, if your mind is running everywhere else, that is not solitude. What one has to do is, you have to ensure that all these forms, when we aspire for grace, love, devotion, humility, when we say we are in the path of devotion, devotion is that which enables the unmanifested divine principle to manifest itself in the inner vision of the devotee. This is what Bhagavan says. This is what is devotion. The unmanifested divine principle, that supreme divine principle, when you see it manifest in your inner vision. That is what is devotion. Whatever service that you are doing, ensure that you don't feel that you are serving others, that you are serving God. If you are taking bath, if you are bathing your child, think that you are doing that, you are purifying this act of, you are doing abhishekam to the Lord Himself. If you are serving food to someone, consider that you are serving food to God Himself. If you are giving food to a beggar, think that God has come in this form and you are serving God. Because it is not a beggar who is asking, it is an Atma who is enjoying that food. You as Atma is giving that Atma. When you are cutting vegetables for cooking, Swami says, consider that you are cutting away your own desires and ego. When you are sweeping the floor, think that you are removing all that is not clean in your heart. If you are rolling chapatis at home, consider that what you are doing is you are broadening your own heart. You are expanding your heart. This is the way, simple ways by which we can move in this journey of slowly withdrawing the mind, slowly making the mind identify itself not with the body but with the Atma. That is that key. The mind has to identify not with the body, not with the external, but with what is our true self, and our true self is the Atma. And the mind has to feel that, and mind has to see everything as that. Consider yourself as the Atma, Swami says. Then you will become one full of compassion, because you will not see anyone different from you. Everything is just one being. Everything is just only you. And that is how you will only find love. You will only love, because whatever you see is just only you. Swami says this is the spiritual exercise you need to perform, because love can accomplish anything in this world. How many ever scriptures you may read, how many ever spiritual exercises you may do, if you do not allow your heart to melt with compassion, Swami says your life will be a sheer waste. So all practices have to be directed towards softening your heart so that it will flow with kindness and love. This is all that is needed, Bhagwan says in a Ugadi discourse. In fact, the clip that I played from you was also from another Ugadi discourse, that was from 1992 Ugadi discourse. Incidentally, as I was contemplating on this, every message came from a Ugadi discourse, and we are now heading towards Ugadi. Perhaps this is what Bhagwan is telling us. Even though Bhagwan here talks about the Turiya stage, what is the Turiya stage? In the Turiya stage, basically the mind is almost non-existent, because after that stage, the mind just merges with the Atma. The mind identifies with the Atma. Just like in deep sleep, the mind does not exist. Sort of, it is there, but it is not there. It is as good as it is not there. That is the stage, and the way to that stage is by developing in our daily life this feeling of identifying ourselves with the Atma and removing everything that is anatma. Recognizing ourselves as I am Atma, Brahma, and that is cultivating that all-pervasive, that broadness. And that happens through service, that happens through constantly feeling that everybody is Him, everybody is Him, everybody is Him. I am Him, but everybody is also Him. So let us slowly in our own ways practice this in our lives. We will at times fail, but we will also experience a lot of joy, and we will see a lot of beautiful ways that this will enrich our lives. But we have to take that first step. Bhagwan will definitely help us. We will see how the Atma itself will guide us and take us to great heights. Yeah, listeners, this is a very small attempt to share whatever I have picked up from this chapter 10 of Sandhya Nivarani. If you have any thoughts, if you have anything that you can add, it would be great, and we will learn together. We will share and we will hold each other's hands and walk on this path with greater clarity and greater energy. Thank you so much for being with me. As always, I offer this endeavor at His lotus feet in all humility. If you have any queries, you can write to listener@ssmediacenter.org, or you can send your queries also to our WhatsApp number 9393-258-258. Thank you so much. Sayonara.